Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
It's the Fight In. It's the Fight In. Clock. It's the Fight In.
Really interesting,
mate. Yeah. Welcome, listeners, to another episode of The Fighting Cock, The Extra Inch. I still say The Fighting Cock, but we've kind of broken free now, haven't we, Nath? I'm Windy, and I'm joined by our tactics guy, Nathan Aplar.
All right, mate.
How you doing, Nathan?
Yeah, I'm not too bad. Yourself?
I'm pretty good. We're going to talk a bit about the two England games and the first round of games in general, or the group games in general, I suppose. But before we begin, I just wanted to say how sorry I was to hear the news yesterday about Goran Bundyevcevic, who sadly passed away at just 45. He'd had a stroke in April, which I wasn't even aware of, but apparently was, you know, quite widely known, and certainly the Serbian players had spoken about it. I realise that now, having read up on it. Bundyevcevic was one of those players who was a little bit before his time. He was signed by Glenn Hoddle, which I think speaks volumes, and he was a ball-playing centre-back. Actually, he was a sweeper, and Spurs didn't always play with a sweeper. So he didn't quite fit in, and he broke the mould a little. And I kind of feel like had he played in the Premier League 10 years later, he may have been more of a success. But he always came across as a really good guy, and I'm just so sorry to hear that news. Do you have any memories of Bundyevcevic, Nathan?
Sort of just before my time, really. Sort of 06, 07, 08 is when I started to get into Tottenham, which you've outed me for sort of a newcomer now. Thanks, mate.
That wasn't deliberate. Yeah, he was at Spurs for 5 years and he only played 50 games. He ended up having quite a lot of injuries. I think I'm right in saying he fractured his cheekbone in his first season. That's a vague memory, and I could be getting confused with another player. But yeah, really sad news. So yeah, rest in peace, Goran. We'll talk briefly about transfer news, but this could be super brief because I don't think there really is much to speak about. So there's been one new or fresh link this week that I've seen, which is Alassane Plié, or Plia, player?
I don't know. No idea.
Who a few days ago was strongly linked, and then today in L'Équipe it's basically a made-up rumour, it seems. I have never seen him play, know very little about him, have watched YouTube videos on the back of hearing about him, and he does seem like a poor man's Anthony Martial.
So, right.
I guess the link implies that we want that type of player. God.
Jesus.
I'm sorry. Have you seen any other transfer links?
I really haven't. It's sort of gone all a bit dead. I've looked at whatever his name, Alassane's numbers, and they're quite impressive. But apparently he's also got a pretty serious knee injury, which we may want to steer clear of. Perhaps that's why the interest is gone, or, you know, been backtracked on.
Mm. Yeah, I guess maybe if his numbers are good, maybe he's a name that cropped up out of a review of numbers, and then a bit of deeper digging showed knee problems, and that would put any club off. So that would make sense. Are you concerned by the lack of transfer activity so far?
I think that I'm sort of soothed by the World Cup in that I'm not thinking about it. If this was without a World Cup and we were just sitting around twiddling our thumbs, I might sort of be getting a bit anxious.
Yeah, I think I'd be going out of my mind, especially because Pochettino did make those comments about wanting to kind of get business done early and get players in for pre-season. I think I'm right in saying that pre-season starts again on Monday.
Yeah, we've got sort of half our squad coming back.
Yeah. And no new signings, so it obviously hasn't quite gone to plan, but there we go, this is Spurs, what can we expect? So I guess we talk about England now, because there's plenty to chat about. Let's start in the Belgium game, because it's the freshest in the memory. What were your takeaways from the game? There have been a kind of two schools of thought on social media, one of which was neither team wanted to win, because losing the game and finishing second in the group was of benefit, due to therefore being on the easier side of the draw, easier in inverted commas. The other thought being it was a game that you'd expect when teams make mass changes and therefore momentum is lost to some degree. Did you have any particular thoughts, Nathan?
Well, I sort of wrote beforehand, that I couldn't see England. I didn't see most teams taking the approach of deliberately aiming for second. And I certainly didn't expect that from England, who are sort of quite traditionalist in how we approach football as a nation. So I was surprised. I won't say impressed, but maybe a tad pleased that we took such a cynical approach and made those, what was it, 8 or 9 changes, 8 changes that sort of threw the game in that direction, at least.
Yeah, I think I was surprised as well, to be honest. I was expecting some rotation, but not kind of Spurs in the League Cup third round rotation. It seemed excessive to me. You're pleased that we did it and we finished second. I'm in the other camp. I actually feel like we should have gone out to win this game to maintain momentum. I feel like momentum in tournaments is absolutely huge. And although the argument is that it's different players and therefore the momentum won't have been lost, I think the whole discussion around England has changed now. And Southgate's invited pressure onto himself, because if we don't beat Colombia, suddenly people are saying, well, you could have won that game against Belgium and we could be playing Japan, which is on paper a lot easier than a Colombia tie. You know, they have one of the best players in the tournament, or possibly, given he seems to be injured. But it was a strange game in many ways. Regardless, it was a very stodgy kind of midfieldy game. And I felt like England didn't get the ball out wide as early as we had in our previous two matches. And perhaps that's partly due to Belgium's style and the fact that they're simply a better team than Tunisia and Panama. I mean, they dominated the ball, as you'd expect, with Moussa Dembélé in midfield. Oh, and by the way, Dembélé came out with a 98.5% pass completion rate, which is just incredible.
How did he look to you? How was his? How did you see his whole game?
He was very conservative with his use of the ball, but that was effective. And to be honest, the job he did required him to be conservative, and I thought Belgium did enough to justify victory. If you look at the XG, the numbers are low, so 0.6 for England, 1.0 for Belgium, according to Michael Cayley's model. So not a game of great chances, and Yanezai's shot was, you know, wonderful goal, very low XG on that, and it's not kind of that is the moment of magic that brought the game to life, in as the cliche would say. But Belgium did have a couple of other opportunities as well. Did you notice Michy Batshuayi's incident after the goal?
I did. That was very funny.
Absolutely incredible. So if you haven't seen it, after Yanezai's strike, after he killed the ball beyond Pickford, Batshuayi went to blast the ball into the side of a net and misjudged it, smashed it onto the post, it ricocheted and hit him in the face. Just amazing.
I think it's the perfect metaphor for signing for Chelsea.
Yeah, it really was. It was incredible. He went straight onto Twitter afterwards, as he does. He's got a strong social media presence, and he laughed at himself, so it was all fine, but very, very amusing. What did you think of Pickford for the goal?
I will defer to David Priest, and that the criticism has been overblown.
I thought the criticism had been overblown as well. What did David Priest have to say?
Well, he was more... I haven't read it fully. I sort of glanced at it. He was more concerned with the specifics of him using the wrong hand, in quotation marks, and used it as a vehicle to sort of worry about the general level of goalkeeping analysis. So maybe he wasn't absolving Pickford of blame, but more worried about the specific way it was being done.
Yeah, I think that's fair. So Lee Dixon was quick to sort of pile in on Pickford. I think Gary Neville also said something about wrong hand.
Yeah.
I'm not a goalkeeping expert by any... many would say I'm not a football expert, but I certainly am not a goalkeeping expert, so I wouldn't like to cast judgment either way. But to suggest it was the wrong hand, to me, seemed like a bit blamey, a bit unnecessarily blamey. I think it was a difficult shot that he was probably not going to save, regardless of which hand he went with. And actually, if we're looking to point the finger at anyone, it's Danny Rose for letting Yanezai come inside onto his strong foot. Rose should know Yanezai well, because he's a Premier League player.
I do think that Delph sort of moved too far over as well and left it as a one-on-one situation. I'm not absolving Danny Rose, but I think that then to for the team to create the 1v1 situation was the initial failure.
Yes, absolutely. I totally agree. With two of them there, they could have done more to stop a shot coming in. So it was interesting, given that we made these kind of eight rotations as such, that the three players, in my opinion, closest to staking a claim for the first team, I thought were three of our poorer players, in Rose, Rashford and Loftus-Cheek. Rose primarily for the goal, but I thought also sometimes his decision making ended up with him one-on-one and having to do something clever, whereas he didn't necessarily use his teammates around him as well as Young had, although, you know, I'm no great Ashley Young fan. Rashford, I thought, constantly made bad decisions and his finishing was poor. And Loftus-Cheek seemed to be very loose in the middle of the pitch on this occasion, having looked good when he come off the bench previously. Any comment on any of those three, Nathan?
Just that I'm a tiny bit glad that Rashford had a bad performance, because I really want us to stick with Sterling, because I think he's the second best player in the squad and he's someone who, as a nation, we need to nurture more to get the best out of him. So I'm glad that his replacement isn't likely to take his place.
Yeah, I totally agree. There's been a lot of clamouring for Rashford to play, and I really like Rashford as a player. I think he has enormous potential, but he's still very rough around the edges, and to expect him to start in certainly in knockout rounds of the World Cup is expecting a hell of a lot. I think he's a great bench option right now, and like you say, Sterling's the much more polished player, much more complete. He's got that wonderful close control in tight spaces and burst acceleration, so I'm glad, like you, that Rashford's probably waited his opportunity and that Sterling will surely be back in. I felt generally that Belgium kept us at arm's length for the majority of the game, and I also thought that we sort of lacked creativity in the central midfield, and I would even go as far as to say that we also lacked that against Panama. I know that sounds crazy, having scored six, but I felt like Dele in the first game gave us some through ball excitement, certainly in the first half an hour of the first game, and I don't think we've really had that since, and we've been very reliant on individual pieces of magic or just the fact that we've been staying solid, delivering good balls into the box and particularly putting in some excellent set pieces. How do you feel about that? What did you make of the Panama game?
Yeah, we didn't create a lot from open play. We a lot of it came from set pieces, but it came in such a big way in that department that we then no longer had the needs to create from open play. So yeah, it was one of the oddest sort of, was it 6-1s?
Yeah.
I've seen. So I mean, it's hard to be critical, but it's also hard to be excited about that performance.
Yeah, I mean, you were really up on England after the Tunisia game. Do you still feel as excited, or is it more that the other teams have done less well than expected?
The excitement might have dissipated, but I still have a lot of confidence in this England side.
I think it's safe to say there's more to come from a number of the players. Kane's really the only one who's left everything out there so far, and five goals already in his first tournament for England, that puts him level with Jeff Hurst for tournament goals and above Bobby Charlton, Michael Owen, David Beckham. I mean, it's absolutely staggering what he's achieving in his career. He's just a marvel, he really is. I looked briefly at the number of long balls in each of the games because from my perception, it seemed that we were looking early for Rashford and Vardy, given that their strengths, or certainly two of their strengths, are running over the top beyond defenders. And there was a slight upturn, so we played 12% long balls against Tunisia, 8% of our passes against Panama were long balls, and 14% against Belgium were long balls. So clearly we played much more of a short passing game against Panama, upped that against Belgium. And again, our passes, our target zone passes, so passing to the final third was 20% against Panama and 25% against Belgium. So that implies to me that there was a deliberate tactic to look early for Vardy and for Rashford. With that in mind, I personally don't think that Dier, Delph and Loftus-Cheek were the right picks in midfield. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think I see what you're saying there, and that's sort of a control midfield, isn't it?
Yeah,
and we were going long over the top of it, which, yeah, is a mismatch. I take your point. I also think that Belgium will have forced us to go long as well.
They absolutely did. Yeah, they set traps and we fell for them, and that's, you know, totally to be expected against a team with as many talented players as Belgium. They were actually surprisingly organised for a Martinez team as well, despite playing Nasser Chadli as wing-back. We had a question from Aaron O'Neill, who is Aaron Spurs 200 on Twitter, who said, do England carry on with a fully fit Loftus-Cheek, or does a semi-fit Ali come back in for the next game? Personally, I think Ali should come straight back in. He gives England a little unpredictability by producing a moment of magic. Then there's the effect that has on the new season. So he's looking at that from a Spurs perspective as well. Do you have a feeling, Nathan, on who should start the next game against Colombia?
I wouldn't want us to rush Ali back if he's not fit. I think it might be a little arrogant to be looking beyond Colombia, but I think, you know, just give him another game off if he's still not 100%. And I know Loftus-Cheek didn't impress against Belgium. I thought he was decent against Panama. So I would stick with him for another game if Dele's not there.
They've really got quite different skill sets as players. It's interesting that they're sort of being seen as the interchangeable ones, because Dele is much better at running without the ball, whereas Loftus-Cheek is much better at running with the ball. And I personally don't see the same sort of connection between Kane and Loftus-Cheek as you would naturally see and expect from Kane and Dele, where it's clearly there. I mean, they read each other's games really well. I'm quite surprised they're being seen as totally interchangeable, but I guess he's just the next best attacking midfielder we have. But do you think there's any chance that we actually change things up and go Dier and Henderson against Colombia?
No, I think if we do switch back to a 3-4-3 that England have used before, it will be with Loftus-Cheek as the central midfielder.
Just for that bit more dynamism. I actually felt Dier had a poor game last night. I thought he was one of the few who really didn't look up to it. I don't know if that's just because he maybe a few games having not played for a while, he just looked a bit rusty, but he looked well down on Henderson's performance levels, in my opinion. Whereas before the tournament, I would have said I'm all for Dier playing ahead of Henderson.
It's a weird one, because in the 2016 Euros, I thought Dier was actually really, really good despite how poor England were as a team. And so I was looking at that long term, thinking, wow, he's going to be England's defensive midfielder for years to come. But it's very hard to argue that at the moment, isn't it?
It really is, yeah. Yeah, and Henderson's played well so far. So, I mean, that's great from England's perspective, but not so good from Eric Dier's perspective. And I sort of struggle to see how he gets back into the team as a mainstay if we keep playing this formation and if Henderson keeps playing as well as he has been. So talking about other teams as well, let's move on and chat about the last 16 generally. John on Twitter said, we now know the last 16 and the route they will take. What will the semi-final lineup be? Have you plotted this yet, Nathan?
I'm just having a look now. So I think we're going to have France, Brazil, and England, Spain.
Mm.
Or Colombia, Spain.
Yeah. I can actually see Uruguay scraping through. They've been very patchy.
Yep.
But they have got some incredible players. Certainly their front line, but I actually have been really impressed with their back line as well. Coates has looked great, which I wasn't expecting. So I'll go Uruguay, Brazil. Spain, I think, will beat Russia, and then probably Croatia. I think we might lose to Colombia. And if we beat Colombia, I could see us losing to Sweden.
Oh, God.
Yeah, Sweden have been so solid. I mean, it's not pretty to watch, but they get the job done. I don't know, I just have lost a bit of confidence in England after the Belgium game, and partly after the Panama. The sort of the lack of open play creativity in the Panama game. Obviously, the scoreline was amazing. It was a great occasion. I loved celebrating every goal. Thoroughly enjoyed it. But my early optimism has dissipated somewhat. But having said that, this World Cup's been amazing. I've really enjoyed this tournament. There's been so much drama. And we ought to speak about the Germany game, really. What did you make of that?
I think Germany were a little unlucky, not just in that game, but throughout the three games they played, not to convert more goals. But defensively, they've been not quite a shambles, but very weak all tournament.
Their goal creation, or their chance creation, has been very sort of cross-heavy, though, hasn't it? Like, basically, it's just getting on the end of crosses and forcing things in, whereas the German teams we've become accustomed to seeing have been much more creative, much more, Raumdeuter to Thomas Müller just hasn't been invading space like he used to, and that's, in my opinion, had quite a large bearing on the way they've played. I think also some of their personnel selections in other areas haven't been great, but it's also very easy to say they should have selected Sane. Did I say the right one?
You did this time.
I did say. I really had to think about that. Oh my God, it's so ridiculous. The sort of exclusion of Sane, people are now saying, there you go, they would have qualified Werrett for that. I'm not sure I fully agree with that. It's been the balance in midfield as much as anything, but that was such a dramatic game, and wonderful that Kyungmin Son scored the ultimate winning goal in the manner he did. A meme-worthy manner.
It's very, very Korean commentary. I think on the Sane argument, it's certainly easy to say, oh, well, they didn't bring good attacking player, and they should have done. I think one thing that Germany might need to, or want to look at doing in the near future is switching to inverted fullbacks in sort of the style of City and Bayern Munich before that we've seen. And for that, you're going to want sort of more outside wingers, which I think is the reason that Sane was excluded, is that he didn't perform well in the friendlies for Germany, where he's asked to play inside, and that's not suited him. But they might now want to change that style up and move to outside wingers. So there is a lens that you can look at Sane's exclusion and see it as a problem.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. I don't think Germany need to worry, personally. I mean, they have a lot of young talent to pick from, so I don't think they've got any long-term concerns. But I think they probably will change manager, and that'll be, obviously, that will then require a new bedding in period of a new manager, a new system, etc., etc. So they might go backwards in the short term, which is no bad thing. Let's talk a little bit about the Poland-Japan match as well. So Terry of Destiny said, and his Twitter handle is Cannot Cope, which is pretty good. Did well to get that one. He said, thoughts on the Poland-Japan kick around, professional courtesy from Poland, Poland just didn't care, or shades of Austria-Germany 1982. I didn't actually see this one. Did you, Nathan?
I saw sort of a clip of the final couple of minutes. I think that's what he's pointing towards, particularly. Yeah, I mean, the individual teams have taken a lot of the blame. I've seen some pretty serious hit pieces from major outlets, but I think that this isn't the first time we've seen a game of this sort. It isn't the third or fifth time we've seen it either. So the issue is with the setup and with the rules and with the process, and not with the individual teams. And that's where the blame needs to lie for that, I think.
Interesting. Yeah, I totally agree. Like you, I saw that the clip of Japan just passing the ball.
Under no pressure.
Side to side to side to side, under no pressure, yeah. And it's kind of embarrassing, but like you say, they're doing what... They're filling a space that's been given to them, essentially. Let's talk a bit about some of the other teams who've made it through to the round of 16 as well. We've picked on the big ones, but this tournament's been one of upsets, really, and some of the smaller teams showing that they shouldn't be written off. And I think one of the teams who's done particularly well in that regard are Mexico. I feel sorry for them. They've got Brazil in the round of 16 because I feel like they deserve to go further. Do you think they'll give Brazil a tough match?
I think they might be Brazil's toughest match, at least to the semis. I think that is the game of the last 16, or has the capacity to be the game of the last 16. I think Mexico are a really interesting counter-attack team, as we saw against Germany. And they'll set up sensibly against Brazil, who are individually very good, are defensively very good. They're good in their counter-press, but they're not very creative in a systemic sense. And I think it could be a close one for Brazil. I still have them favourites, maybe second or first favourites overall, but I think that would be a very tough game for them.
They're doing the classic tournament thing of starting slowly and gathering momentum, I think. I think Marcelo might be injured for the Mexico game, and I think that would be a big loss. That we pointed out that left side, that group of players on their left side, is their strongest area of the pitch, with Coutinho, Neymar and Marcelo. And without Marcelo making those overlapping runs, there's a lot of thrust gone. Neymar's been slightly disappointing so far. He's certainly not hit the ground running, but Coutinho's been exceptional. He's really impressed me. I think he's come on a level since he left Liverpool, actually. He's someone who I thought was good but not great. I was surprised when he signed for Barcelona, and I thought they should have signed Eriksen instead. I thought he's better. But Coutinho looks really good, and kind of looks like their main man at the moment. Although, obviously, I'm overlooking Paulinho there, who's clearly their main man. But speaking of main men, we've got Luka Modric against Christian Eriksen as Croatia line up against Denmark. Battle of Spurs' current number 10 against previous, I was going to say number 10, but not 8 for Spurs, really, wasn't he? Have you been impressed with Modric so far in the tournament?
Yeah, I've been impressed with Croatia generally. I wanted to see more Kovacic. I think he played in the last game, which I missed. But yeah, they've got so much talent and similar talent in Modric, Kovacic and Rakitic. It's strange, but they've been good to watch.
And who do you think is going to win that one? I see that as one of the tightest games of the final 16.
I think Croatia will have too much of Denmark. I don't think they can stand up to them defensively.
Mm. Yeah, I tend to agree. Although when Eriksen's on the pitch, anything's possible. And I kind of want, I'm kind of backing them for Eriksen, really. Yeah, we've got another question from Ball Control at Ball Control Blog. He said, would you consider Southgate a viable option if the worst was to happen, i.e. Poch leaves? The philosophy is similar and he appears to have a good rapport with Harry. You're a fan of Southgate, Nathan. How would you feel about that?
Yeah, I am a fan. Trunk asked me the same question the other day on Twitter. He does play sort of a similar style. He does have a good relationship with Harry, although maybe not the best relationship with Dele. I would probably consider him at the moment. I think he would be in the sort of first 5 or 6 picks that you'd be looking at. But I would want to see a little more. I think that the Colombia game is a good test to get a real grasp on Southgate. I think after that game, we'll know for sure if he's a very good manager or not.
There's certainly a lot to like about him in terms of a future Spurs manager. He's obviously got an interest in youth development, as has Daniel Levy, having spent millions of pounds on an academy. So that's one box ticked. He's very statesmanlike. He's a company man. He will toe the party line, which Levy will absolutely appreciate. I'd say he's slightly more pragmatic than Pochettino in his style, and it's a pragmatism which wouldn't always go down well with Spurs fans, I think. So perhaps there's a bit of flair that needs to be eked out before we can see him as Spurs manager. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot to like there. And like you say, the rapport with Harry is great. Rapport with Dele seems to be less so. There was the incident where he kind of called him out for messing about on the bench in a friendly. Whether that's a problem, I don't know. Maybe it's a message that's ultimately worked because he was back in the first choice starting 11 for the first World Cup match. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be hard to replace Pochettino with anyone, let's face it. He's just incredible. But Southgate's not a bad shout. Is there anything else you'd like to cover, Nate, that we haven't spoken about?
No, I think that's it.
We've done a good job, a little roundup there, and we'll be back at some point, probably after the Colombia game, to talk about that match. Thanks for listening. Hope you've enjoyed it. Enjoy the round of 16, and we'll be back soon.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.